Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another Just Tennis Talk Show Radio. I'm your host, Coach Wes Fuller, along with my wonderful and talented co-host, Susan Nardi. Hey, Susan, how you doing today?
We're doing great in Texas. How's everything in Hotlanta?
Hot. I mean, it was hot today. I mean, actually, it was pretty good yesterday and today. But they say tonight it's gonna be cold in the morning, and we're supposed to have practice at 9 and 10. And they said, you know, the high here is going to be tomorrow at 40, and it's not even going to hit that until the afternoon. So it's going to be a cold one. You know, a couple of guys played in some tournaments. Older guys played in the tournaments. They didn't do this. They didn't do so well. And hey, listen, they got practice. I might be there bungled up. Even if I don't let the little kids come, they're coming to practice. You know, they have to, you know, they're coming to practice. You know, I'm in one of those kind of moods. You know, one of those moods. Well, how's it over there? What you doing up in your part of town?
Oh, we're, you know, well, a lot of people have tomorrow off with it being Martin Luther King Day, but I'm still busy on the court. I got lots of lessons going on, so I'm up at Tennis Paradise and with my partner in crime, Russell, and we're going to be each doing our own thing tomorrow. So, you know, I got a wide variety of, you know, little kids, adults, you know, and everything in between tomorrow. So it'll be a busy day.
As you mentioned tomorrow, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of people have that day off the celebration of Martin Luther King Day. You know, I think that day actually has a lot of meaning also in the sport of tennis. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine and we got into a conversation and, you know, we were talking about how tennis is such, you know, a racial sport and a prejudiced sport. And I took a different stance. You know, I'm always, don't get me wrong, Susan, I'm always down for rights, and I'm always down for things. And I'm not saying tennis is perfect, and I'm not saying what tennis used to be. However, tennis has made a lot of change. Tennis, a whole lot of change. And you cannot blame today for the mindsets of some of yesterday. So you can't change this overnight, but tennis has made a lot of change. I mean, do you think since the time of, I mean, you know, it's you know, we're limited in Afro-Americans, we're limited to different things, but are we really limited in these things, or is it that our kids, the Afro-American kids and even different little kids, that because of maybe it was racial, that we're having to overcome that, and it takes time to do that. You know, it just doesn't happen overnight. And I think Serena, and I think a lot of everyone, I think all the Americans have stood up for us all. But I think, you know, when it comes to sports and when it comes to tennis, I just wonder why we use sometimes a race when still it's about winning. You know, I don't think that race was the reason that your daughter lost. I mean, yes, I do understand that there's reasons there can be, you know, an official can cheat for whatever reasons, but that's not why your daughter lost. So how can you use that race is why you don't, you know, you don't go far in the sport, or you're actually not attracted to the sport. And you know, I really think that Martin Luther King and all and what he stood for is really reflected in tennis. You know, it, I mean, is tennis perfect? No, but it's better.
No, and it's better, and it's really interesting of all the people that you have this conversation with, it's me, is, you know, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but one of my biggest influences, coaching-wise, was this fellow by the name of Sam Terry, and he was the high school coach. He was an extremely good player. He wasn't not your typical high school coach. I mean, this was somebody that played at the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff, had some major wins as a junior, and he was an African-American coach. And, you know, I grew up in Charlottesville, Virginia, and, you know, here we are, a bunch of country club kind of kids. And, you know, we were the only ones with a, you know, non-white coach. And I guess maybe I've had so much exposure to things and eye-opening things, but it was, I mean, and I've had a lot of great coaches in my time, but probably the biggest impact was what he had on me and my coaching style and how I do things. And I think for us girls that played for him and the guys that did too, how his impact has changed us and how hopefully our point of view will help change things. And I think it does take, I hate to say it, generations. It does take some time, but, you know, it's one of those it's one of those things that not everybody is maybe as open-minded, and I'm not saying that I'm perfect in that regard at all, but
I think a lot more people are open-minded. I think a lot of them just don't want to accept the fact that maybe their child or their young player may not be as good as they are. But one thing that I wanted to say or to say is that, you know, as I go through life or as I go through, you know, the things I do and through groups and through social medias and things, I start to realizing that we're not separated or we're no different, that some inner city kids, we grow up with a different meaning of playing sports. We grow up with a different reasons for playing sports. You know, I meet a lot of coaches and a lot of different people and a lot of different all kind of events, different things where we're pumping to these kids and we're saying to kids, you know, when you go out here, winning's not important. We don't want you to focus on winning. We want you to focus on the process. We want you to focus on this. We want you to think about the life lesson. We want you to focus on this. But I don't think that fits with an inner city kid. I think it may fit with a child that is suburban or their parents, you know, can maybe afford to lose or afford $40, $50 every week or every month versus a child that they winning is hope. Why? Because they play a game to win. And I think that there's a disconnect there between some coaches that they can't understand that to some kids, when you tell them not to win, it's counterproductive to the way society in the position that they're in society. Meaning, if in a perfect world, yes, maybe we can tell that child not to win. But in the world that we're in, maybe that desire to this child, the situation that he's in this inner city kids where his family can't afford tennis, his uncle paid for the tournament, and they're all white, and they're football fans, and they're this, that, and we tennis coaches say to them or to those parents, well, you're putting unnecessary pressure on a child, when in reality they're not. Why? Because why do you go to a high school football game? For your child to win. You're cheering, you want your child to win. Why do you go to a high school basketball game? To want your child to win. So why shouldn't a parent or an adult or a relative want to go to the tennis tournament and want their child to win? Coaches tell children that, and it contradicts the parents' thoughts, what they think, and then therefore the child gets taken out. Why? Because the coach doesn't understand the social aspect of where that child comes from or doesn't understand that there's a whole other world than what they perceive.
Yeah, well, even Coach Wooden had told me, sitting across from him at the breakfast table 2 years before he died, that, you know, he never said the word winning, but he sure did imply it a lot, even in camps. And it's, you know, and it depends on the situation. I know the kids that I worked in with in Manhattan Beach and at the Riviera Country Club and whatever were very different than the kids that I worked with in Newport News that were from Aqueduct that were the Achievable Dream kids and their things. And I think sometimes it's hard for coaches to know how to adapt or to adapt. I mean, I think it takes a lot of skill and a lot of understanding. And I mean, I can't fault the coaches at all, but I think in order to teach in a lot of different environments, I think it takes a special kind of person to be successful in all those environments. And I'm not saying that I've been successful in all those environments or anything along that level and putting myself up on a pedestal, but I think I truly believe I have grown from these experiences, and, you know, sitting here at this stage of my life and my career, I've learned a lot, and it's made me a lot better as a coach and as a person. So,
and I'm going to look at it a little different, I guess, because of where, you know, I'm from an inner city, Camden, New Jersey, which is, below the poverty. For years, it's been the murder capital of the world. And when I was coming up, young kids didn't play tennis. Tennis was a sissy sport. Why did I play tennis? My mother told me to play tennis. I played tennis at 9. I loved it. Teachers and adults, they taught tennis, so I started hanging out at the tennis court. Why didn't kids call it a sissy sport when I played it? Well, if you called me the bull on the basketball court, well, not going to call you a sissy sport in tennis. And I started using, I had a lot of success in juniors because my attitude in basketball was win. It's actually an ignorance. I try to tell people that for Michael Jordan or for a person to run with a ball and you're standing there and you're going to try to block it and them just to throw that in your face, that's ignorant. That's ignorant. That's an ignorant. That's a mentality that these athletes have, and that mentality is because you want to win. You can't do that. You can't be your best. You can't do your best if you're not trying to win. There are many times when, and by doing that, we allow the special in the kid. We allow the kid to actually sometimes learn that it doesn't take athleticism. It takes winning. Why? Because you wanted to win so much, but you didn't want to win with technique. You wanted to win with athleticism. That's a great learning experience. But if the child's not trying to win, then he never gets to understand that learning experience. I think that our approach to kids, and I'm not saying every kid, but I am saying every kid. Why? Because every kid, one time in their life, is usually going to have to get a job. They're going to have to be challenged. In our school systems, it's all about your grades. It's all about these. Everything is about competition. But tennis.
It's weird how your perception is of it, because to me, tennis was a rich, I grew up very middle class. But it was very much still a upper crust elite thing. And, I jokingly said country club kids. I think me and my double partner weren't, we weren't, but everybody else on the team pretty much was. And, I played because of my father. My mom was the uber jock. But I just wanted to beat my sisters at something. And I chose tennis.
But it was a rich sport, Susan.
It was. Back then, today, still, it is a rich sport. And I just liked whacking the ball. I mean, in all honesty, I liked whacking the ball. And, true story, story about how my dad taught me how to play tennis over the years and tell me I'm Elmer Fudd. But years later, trust me, I've probably received lots of therapy from this. But I used to draw pictures of my sister, not my oldest one, but my sister closest to me in age. I used to draw pictures on the balls of her face and used to whack it.
Even when I was coming up, Susan, tennis was a rich sport. But I found a way. You know what I used to do? I used to clean the court. I played tennis, and if I played in the tournament, I got to know some of the players. Well, these players showed me what they did to play free. I called up. I went to a club, and one of them said, "Hey, this is Wes Fuller." I was a court cleaner. I cleaned the courts. I'd clean the courts. Why? To pay. I'd ride from Camden to Cherry Hill on a bicycle. Clean the courts. Why? Just to hit tennis balls inside. When people tell me it's – and everybody I dealt with – was white. None of them were black. When the person who told me that I could court clean, he didn't have to say I could court clean. I was black. So if it was racist, no. My point is that it's racist, but it's getting better – getting better, and we should stop using sometimes race as an excuse for our kids, and start understanding that maybe our perspective behind it, where winning is not everything, is maybe damaging a lot of kids and alienating a lot of kids. I mean, I'm just being honest. It alienates a lot of kids.
And I could see that. I mean, it's funny. You know, you clean courts. I would spend all day at the courts, and I eventually got the guy that I took group lessons from to allow me to pick up balls for him. So I was the ball picker-upper, and I picked up balls. And eventually I picked up balls for 5 or 6 hours and would, you know, when he was in between stuff, hit balls up against the fence or a wall, you know, the wall or something like that. And then he would say, okay, Susan, you pick up balls for 5 or 6 hours, and I'll give you an extra half an hour. I mean,
that
was terrible every day.
I had nobody really to give me less. I mean, my grandmother, they dropped me off. When I first started, I was 9. They dropped me off at tennis courts at 8 o'clock in the morning and picked me up at 6 at night. I'd be playing the older guys, for sandwiches and sodas. I'd play them for food. I'd play them, but a lot of them were teachers, but I was also tall. But I also loved the sport. I loved the sport because it's an individual sport that actually is much more demanding and much more physical than what people think, and it's a great sport, and it's a sport that our children and our kids need to understand, but also the way we introduce that sport and the way we present that sport also has to, I guess, equal what a person is, what a child or what that community offers it. I don't know how to say it well, meaning that we can't have one system. And when we're talking about developing tennis, you know, back in my day, we didn't have a system of tennis like now we have ROG Rogue. Susan, what is ROG? I mean, what is Susan? You know this more than me. You've been doing younger kids and doing this stuff way before I was doing it. And I mean, I was pretty much good with older kids because I'm a hollower. I'm a get in your face. I'm a pusher. I'm a bring it out of everything to you. And sometimes for young kids, that's not good. Even for smaller kids and under 10, that's not good because they can get shell shocked. Why? Because they may come from a family where there's no yelling, or a Christian family where there's none of this, where my coaching is about winning, 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 winning. And that maybe it comes from where I'm from, where, because you'll find thousands, if not millions of families that their kids have the same mindset of mine. But then there's also millions of kids that don't have that mindset, and families don't have that mindset. And that's just life. How is Rogue something that can answer all of that? I mean, how did it come about? I mean, how did the system?
Well, you know, I think the origins really came from Belgium, although there had been different pockets of different people doing different things for years. I know in my own case, my dad being an engineer, he modified the equipment dramatically. He had my mom take syringes, because she was a nurse, and punch holes in them and flatten the balls out, and took an old Davis Tad racket, you know, the wooden ones with the narrow necks, and he cut off the handles, and then he re-gripped them, so he made smaller rackets. He made something to my size, and, you know, we always played on a smaller space, but I think the overall development of the program probably has a lot of its origins in Europe. I know that there was a guy when I worked at Vandermeer's, and I want to say he was from Sweden, and I could be wrong, but they would put, like, nylon, like, stockings, like, pantyhose over, I do believe, and if I get this wrong, I hope Pat Vandermeer will correct me, because she would know the story probably better than I would, but they would put the stockings over coat hangers and then kind of create a grip down there, and use something like that with, like, Nerf balls. So, I mean, there's been lots of variations, but the whole concept is what they've done in lots of sports, whether it's with YBA or Little League and stuff, is size it down, the court space or the field space that you need, and slowing it down so kids can progress and learn the skills necessary. And as they get more skilled, increase the size and the speed of things to do it. And I mean, the concept is sound, and it can do a lot of things, and it can create environments. But like so many things, it requires good coaching and good coaches.
Is it good? My look on it is it's not good for us. It's bad on the child, because we're modifying the sports and the courts. Why? For the child to be able to compete. Sometimes if they can't do it on a regular court, maybe mentally and physically they're not really ready to compete. We're modifying the courts and making the courts, why, so they compete, but we're not thinking about the mental aspect of competition, the mental aspect of training to compete. Now that we've modified courts, now we allow coaches and parents to now push little kids and younger kids to be more technically. Why? Because we want to win. More of this, more of that. Why? Because we want to win. Why? On the older courts,
well,
when they have bigger courts.
Well, I find kids are usually less technical when they want to win. They'll just do whatever to get the ball over. But I think a lot of it has to do with training. It's one of the reasons why I'm a big fan of Frank Giampaolo and what he advocates so well and does such a wonderful job with, about doing parent training and training the parents on their roles and responsibility, and then mental and emotional training. And I think that's critical part of the process, that you have to start from moment one.
But we create that problem. I think by making courts smaller, making balls easier, making this more easy, we're introducing competition to kids and parents earlier. We cannot expect, and we should not expect, a parent to not want their child to win.
Well, I think there's competition at every level. And I mean, I think tennis is a highly skilled sport, and it definitely takes longer to learn than maybe some other sports. But, you know, I think you have to do everything.
Take an 8-year-old back in our day that had a regular racket, that had a ball on a regular court. When he went to play a 10 or 12 tournament, or because a 12 is when you start regular court, when he went to play that, the parent and the coach did not have the expectation of trying to win it. They had the expectation of you trying to develop to play the game. Why? Because they knew the court is bigger. You were physically not able to really put the ball away or do these things. So now we're teaching you that your process was now to develop a stroke, to keep consistency back. Why? Because we have to work on consistency, because you couldn't hit the ball over there. You couldn't hit the ball over there. Why? Because you weren't strong enough. You weren't physically enough to put it away. So now you had to work on your fundamentals, your basic consistency. But now when we make courts smaller, equipment easier for them to do that, now we're not working on consistency. We're working on getting them to a point where they can win. We're not progressing. There's no progression. We've lost the progression. We've jumped from right into competition.
Well, maybe at certain programs, definitely not what happens in Tennis Paradise. I can assure you of that. You know,
did I make any sense?
Well, yeah, you do, and there are a lot of programs that are like that. It's not how we do things in Tennis Paradise. It's definitely not how Russell and I run our program and how we go about things, because we want, you know, we look at it as, here's our approach, and we sit down and we talk to the parents, okay? You know, before we ever get on the court, we talk to the parents. You know, we're going to teach them technique. We're going to work on tactics. We're going to develop our athleticism, the ABCs. We're going to work on mental and emotional training, okay? And we're going to teach you, how the game is played, because we teach things, instruction of that tennis is a game. So we don't necessarily completely isolate something, because you have to too many people teach it like it's just a one skill. and we teach it more as a Gestalt approach. But it's
should there
one
be tournaments at RG? Should there be tournaments at that level? Do you
well,
promote?
It all depends.
Do you
I mean,
promote?
If they're able to rally, they're able to rally on a 36th course, and our program, in order for them to what our criteria is, in order for you to play in a red ball tournament or anything, we want you to be able to rally forehands and backhands, at least be able to have a 10 hit rally. We want you to be able to serve on the diagonal. We want you to be able to understand how to keep score and understand what in and out. We have our criteria as we have our list. And, you know,
but my whole point is, should there be
ready until you can do this list.
Should there be a tournament? Yeah, but I'm just saying, if you can red ball rally, shouldn't you be hitting orange ball? If you can orange ball rally,
no, not
shouldn't
necessarily.
You be playing green ball? But why not?
Well, you know, if you put, I mean, I've seen too many kids that walk into it, and age-wise, they're orange ball. But they don't have the skill set to manage that distance, because they'll run up and they're trying to play just inside the service line. The service line to service line is 44 feet. A red court is 36. So when you're looking at it, if they're running up there, then they can't manage the size court. So they're not
it's
really
because they can't manage the side ball because we're keeping them at red ball too long. Because they shouldn't be running up to something.
Some programs, a lot of programs progress kids.
How do we tell? How do we tell, Susan? How do we tell? What's good? How do we tell? I'm just saying, if a person can red ball rally, well, what's the indicator that if they can red ball rally, then why shouldn't they be now at orange ball? I just think that a kid should not have to be in a red ball tournament. They should be now trying to accomplish to get to orange ball. They shouldn't be worried about competition.
I mean, I could rally red with my next month 4-year-old nephew, and I can red ball rally with him. But the question is, we're not at a full 36 court distance. I'm maybe about 5-6 feet from the net, and he's about 5 or 6 feet. So there's that managing of that court. There's all sorts of technical and tactical abilities. And there's been some great stuff written up by Mike Farrell, by my good friend Mark Tennant, who have wonderful criteria. Midtown Athletic Club, oh, my God, they are such the U.S. model. All the stuff that Butch Staples did in writing that curriculum that gives you guidelines on what you need to be able to do to go from one level to another level to another level. And they're wonderful blueprint.
I'm familiar with pretty much most of the guys that most of the coaches that you've spoken about, and I agree. I mean, they are fantastic coaches. They have some great stuff. I cannot sit here and debate any of their work. One thing, why? Because they're not here. Secondly, because I can't, because there's ways, there's not one way. I think there's multiple ways, and I think it's up to the coach to be able to figure out the best way.
I mean, I've been on the court with all these guys, and even Pankhurst, and probably been on the court less with her than I have with the three guys, but and they all. I mean, Pankhurst and
I've learned from all of them.
More similar.
I think they're all great,
but they are all great, and they all have different personalities. And there's a lot of different. There's some very there's some similarities between Mark Tennant and Beryl. But then again, there's some different ways in which they say and they approach it and their personality on the court. And Pankhurst has a very strong personality and is very different than those guys. I mean, but Staples, who I've known for a long, long time and worked with in Hilton Head, very different. and stuff. So I mean, it all depends. I mean, I've never seen Mike just run a class by himself and stuff. But I hear he does what I do, and he'll get in character mold and get voices and stuff like that. I mean, it's what you have to do to engage the kids. And
I mean, I just don't believe that
to want to work.
I don't believe that we should real. I just don't think that it's. I don't think that it's actually healthy or good or positive to. I'm not saying that using equipment that's small. I'm not saying anything is wrong with it. I don't think that it's healthy to make competitive tournaments for that age group.
Well, I mean, look at what they're doing in baseball and soccer and basketball, the sport that you and I both, they do have it. And tennis has taken a long time, especially in this country. They're far ahead of it in Europe than what we are here.
I don't believe that it's good for them. I think that we are making. I think that we are introducing competition, or introducing work ethic, or introducing hard work, or introducing a job.
Well,
actually,
cool.
I'm just
mean. I mean,
but
well,
that's what I mean. That's why our kids.
Cool.
Maybe that's why our kids.
Is competition, and I mean, you know, I view it as the competition that I had. You know, I was first trying to compete to be number one in my house at anything and everything. And
I mean, I don't say not competition. I mean, even if we had it, I think okay, if we had under, I think that it should be unisex. I think that the system is just like a candy store and a kid. I think that you take a kid into a candy store. I think that any parent that takes their kid in a candy store is crazy to think that their kid is not going to want candy. I think the system is crazy to think that a parent is not going to want their kid to win. That just is crazy. Why? It's just crazy. So now if you have it unisex, parents are not going to be as serious. You still have a competitive system, but parents are not going to be.
Well, you know, and that sounds good, except when you talk to my European colleagues who really say that the girls really don't want to play with the boys. Now, I wasn't that way at all.
Good. You know what? If they don't want to play with the boys.
I liked better than them beating up on a boy in a sporting thing. But, you know, I mean, and some girls are fine with it, and some don't care.
If they don't
want
to play the girl, then they're not ready to play a tournament. Why? Because you should not be playing your opponent. You should be playing the point. So, therefore, you're not ready to play the tournament.
But they don't have to play. There's so many different activities and games that they can play that they don't have to be individual. It can be more team-oriented. There's so many things that they can do.
As a team, the team.
Coaching instruction has to come into play, where coaches have to be really very well trained as far as understanding that childhood development there. You just can't throw somebody in and say, well, you're the least experienced pro and I want to work with high performance players and you're going to do this. I mean, I think you need great coaches at every level, great coaches, but the best of the best need to be at development. I mean, I look at my my buddy Jared Flick, who I think he can do high performance, but yet he can also, Jared's now running the 10 and under program. I look
God.
At Eric Matheson, the same thing. He can run, he can do a high performance.
Did you say Jared?
I know.
Lord.
Any man that has a pug is cool. Okay,
next, you're going to say Coach Dow. Oh, God.
He's
great guy.
He's my bud.
He's a great
one
guy.
Of the most well-spoken guys.
He's a good guy. I mean, he's a good guy. I mean, I like those guys a lot, and
And what are you gonna laugh? Are you gonna laugh when I start talking about Dave Smith too? I mean, you know, my man wears gloves. I mean, his daughter's gonna marry my son. I mean, what can I say?
But
you know,
to get back on these kids.
You know,
kids,
But when you look at some of the people, I mean, DeWu's thing isn't working with the lower kids, although I know that he's very good at it if he chose to do it. It's just, you know,
well, no, I'm not even
going to.
Susan, we cannot talk about. We can't talk about Coach. I mean, Coach DeWu is a different level. Yeah, I mean, he's at a different level where
he prefers doing one level. You know. I definitely prefer one level over the other, and it's for me now. It's more has to do with the physical aspect of it because I just don't want to go out and hit and pound anymore.
He could do any level.
DeWu
could do it any level. He could do any level he wants.
Definitely can. Yeah. You know, Dave Smith can do any level. Jared can do any level. Yeah. I can.
Well, it's a lot of coaches
probably.
There's a lot of coaches out there
that
can do
it. Incredible.
A lot of coaches out there can do any level, but the level that we're talking about is this under 10 and this 12 level.
Yeah, Alec Horton is amazing at it. That's for sure. He can do any level, but it takes like anything. It takes a lot of training and
my whole thing though is as we're making these kids or as we're developing these kids early to compete, that we're developing them early and we're making them use up something that may be a psych or maybe something that by the time they're ready to go to college, they don't want to do it. I think that we're developing, we're allowing kids to do red ball tournaments, orange ball, whatever it is, and we're now introducing competitive, really competitive. See, back in the day when you were 8 playing against the 10s to older kids, you were just out there happy. Your parents are ready, glad if you got a game, let alone now these kids at this age want to win. They don't just want to get a game. They want to win. That pressure is put on them, so it's put on them from 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
But here's the thing, Wes. That's where people like Frank, I had
somebody else
that helped me. I mean, Frank's got resources out there. But you have to prepare.
But you can't expect the parents to do that, though, Susan.
You have to prepare these kids how to handle competition. You have to help the parents understand because things have changed. I mean, we're not using an IBM with a 5 1/4 inch dual floppies. We're using Mac Pros, and you know we have all these resources. I mean, Frank's got these incredible books out. There are lots of good books out. Linda LeClaire's got great material out there. So does Bryce Young. I mean, there's so Desmond Oon, you know, when you get to the level of player that you're talking about, I think Desmond Oon is awesome.
But are those books good for those that can afford to lose? I read a lot. I've seen a lot of those books, and I see a lot of the philosophy and the thoughts, and I think it's great for a certain economical or financial level. I think now if you go down to a poorer level that they scrape to get them into this tournament, get them into this thing, that's a different – they don't understand or relate.
Well, there's also two different ways to go. It all depends. I mean, some people are their whole motivation is to be a pro. Some people's motivation is, I just want to make my high school team. You know, and to them that's the world.
But these inner urban families don't want their kids to be pros. I'm not saying that these inner urban families don't. They don't want the reason that they want their kid to win has nothing to do with wanting to be a pro.
Yeah, sure,
It's the society.
Well, I want my kids to win and to compete too. Whatever he does. With him right now, it's probably a video game in his room. What I was going to say is, you know, I want my son to understand what it is to compete and what it is. And, well, when you play in a tournament, and how many people, there were qualifiers before the they got to the Australian Open main round, and there's a 128 draw, and only one person walks away there with the winner. That's the winner on the men's side, and the winner on the women's side.
But Susan,
you're not always going to win. It's learning how to handle that. Yeah,
but learning how to handle that, should kids at red ball level, orange ball level have to handle that? What age could you actually think that
they're not playing for $1 million or trophies. I mean, $1 million or cars or anything like that. I mean, if anything, they're playing for a little medal around the chest, which I have.
If you gave an 8-year old $1 million, if you gave an 8-year old $1 million, would he do anything different than he would do if he didn't have it? No. He don't know $1 million.
No, I mean, an 8-year old probably doesn't. Well, nowadays he might have more of a concept than what I did. If he just got me my Three Musketeer bar or a chocolate milkshake, I was happy.
But what age do you think, modified courts, modified balls, what age do you think a child could actually physically be able to hit a yellow ball, a regular racket, and on a grip with proper technique?
It varies. I mean,
let me give you some guides. I was going to say a kid that is in their age, they would be in the top 80 percentile of their age as far as size and
physical ability. You know, it depends on their athleticism, but I start even adults, okay? I start adult beginners. I had a lady yesterday who had played some sports. She's 55. She's back in the day and just trying to get active and stuff. And
back in the day
means
she's old?
Well, she's 55. It doesn't mean she's old. But,
no, but
you know,
said back in the day.
But back in the day. So when she was in the late 70s, she was playing basketball. And talking to her, I started her out on a red court with red balls. And then once she got to a certain point and had developed a certain skills, we moved to orange balls on a red court, and we were rallying back and forth, you know, because I need her to develop not only the technical skills, but I want her to develop tactical components. You know, I want her to know how to trade, how to build, you know, and I got to get her to understand, you know, what it's like to move the ball from one side to the other and move her hand. You know, and she got to the point with her forehand, she could put it to my forehand or she could put it to my backhand. And I wasn't hitting it to her backhand because I hadn't gotten there. But, you know, for somebody in 30 minutes, she'd progress and gain a lot of skills. Once I can do that with her backhand and start with, you know, with her serve, I mean, she's already kind of has a little modified volley within a Dave Smith. Well, appreciate that. Is to get her to the point where she can play a game on that, then we'll go to a bigger thing because I don't want to overwhelm her with speed and size. Because if I put her full court on the baseline with yellow balls, you know, she might have gotten 4 or 5 balls in. Now she understands the concept of the game. Now she has some tactical knowledge. She's actually played and rallied. I mean, she just hasn't, you know, I haven't pitched her balls and she hasn't hit balls and me grab another ball out of the basket. We really didn't play with that many balls. I agree.
I think it's a great development tool. I do agree that it's a great development tool. I don't think that tool should be a competition. I do agree. You would not get in any argument with me about it at any level. I mean, an orange ball or red ball should not be just for kids. They could be for anybody. I mean, they could be with anybody. Why? Because I agree with you. They are a great way to sell the game, to make someone be feel a sense of confidence, a feel of accomplishment,
yeah,
a feel
and,
of
and
I've learned
skill.
Something. Yes, I agree with you.
Still a technical thing, but as far as competition, I mean, I don't know if you ever played a musical instrument or not. I
played the sousaphone.
I played guitar.
I was the biggest in the class.
I bet you were. I'm surprised you didn't play the trombone.
I did,
you know,
actually.
It's sort of like real men wear plaid and play trombone, but you know, it's one of those
things. I
wasn't
good
that
at blowing on things.
Yeah, something like that. When I was playing guitar, I was doing recitals, you know, when I was 6 years old, and I mean you're not competing against somebody else, but you're standing out there on the stage, and you got all these other parents out there, and you're having to play your song, and I mean, it taught me a lot about practice.
You want to make? I'm telling you. If it was up to me, if the tennis guys grant me my wish, here's what I'd have. Anybody under 10, you would play against the wall. You would never play really against an opponent, but the wall. You would never play a tournament or anything. You would play the wall that has a line like the net, and you would play the wall. You would play the wall.
Well, I mean,
I think
that's fine for a certain amount of time, but it definitely, for some kids, that would be really boring.
Until you could play yellow ball.
No, they'd be bored to tears. Kids want to play with other kids. And not necessarily do you have to make it we're going to write down the score. I'll have things going on in my group class where they are playing games with each other. I never ask who wins or who loses. Competitive because when I play sports, when I was growing up and we had these most infamous kickball games with the Sandell sisters, and I can remember we would try to do the teams so it would be really, really competitive. Not one team was like killing the other team. We wanted to compete, and then we would practice in our houses and making the ultimate catch or the ultimate kick or dive or whatever it was. And oh yeah, we were pretty competitive. I think if we got together now, it would be pretty awful. But
back in the day,
we're all pretty much uber jocks. But it's one of those.
I mean, I agree with you. I agree with
kids
you. Kids
want to play.
I agree that being on a wall would be a war. Yeah, but it would also be very, I'm not going to lie, it would be boring. And, you know, there's a lots of advantages to Susan. I mean, don't get me wrong when I'm sitting here saying these things. I agree 1,000% of what you're saying about the fact that, you know, you could get a kid there. My biggest problem comes into it in the competitive aspect of it. I'm just being real. I mean, this is on a serious note, on the competitive note. Not necessarily the technical development skill on it, but the competitive aspect of it that I think that there's when we're developing, you should develop with tactics, which is true, but you start making the child do things on their body that, yes, they're capable of doing now, but when is there going to be effects on it 30 years or not? Why? Because you're having them be so on their toes. You're having them be so, there's so much that you're not giving the body enough time to develop, to sleep. You're not giving the body enough time to just be a child. You're making the body start being a high level.
I think a lot of times things are, today, in my opinion, being real here, Gary Vicious and I talk about this a lot. He's the founder of Coaching School, is about things being overly structured, is that we had a lot of free play. And you and I both, and, you know, you in Camden and me down in Charlottesville, you know, I hit with anybody and everybody. And it was free play. I wasn't forced to play something. And one of the things that we're getting ready to do in Beaumont is offering, you know, people call them play dates. We're going to have where kids can come, the nets are going to be out, the balls are going to be out, and they get to play with other kids. And no adults, no, you know,
the only adult
that don't work it out.
It's going to be and no parents, and they get to drop them off. They get to go shopping, do whatever they need to do. And the kids are just going to get to play with other kids. It's not going to be anything special.
And it's,
to give them that experience of playing, because that's what you had, that's what I had. And
they have to
work their way up. That I can't throw them immediately in competition when you need to get them comfortable. And then once you get them comfortable with certain things, then you can integrate it. But like anything, you got
to
be.
And they have to own the court. You know, I tell you, you have to own this court. I tell my kids, I say, when you come on this court, this is where your parents should not be able to tell you anything. This is your court. They invade in your sport. You know, you got to love, you got to do this. You got to play. When I was coming up, you're right, Susan. My mother, I told my mother, I said, Mom, count my tennis trophies. She counted 167 tennis trophies. I said, Mom, how many of them are adults? She said, 57 are adults. The others are juniors. And I'm sitting here. When I was a kid, I played in adult tournaments. I mean, I probably had some adult junior. I mean, some adult doubles in there too. When I come to think about it, so I probably played in about half the same amount of juniors I played. I played in adults. I wasn't forced to have that peer competition, that peer thing. So now when I got to my peer, it never became a peer pressure type of thing. I just played the game. Why? Because I played with adults. I played with so many people that
I played with everybody. And I think that's important. I mean, some of my most memorable junior matches are my doubles partner and I playing these two, quote unquote, to us, they seem older. They were probably only in their 60s. But Carpenter and Parsons and Martha and I had epic battles, and one of them was a doctor, and it was epic battles, but it helped me later on with other things. And I think, you know, I had such a smattering of experience, and I'm serious when I say my biggest competition was in my house, and then on my street with the Sandell system.
I was only a child, but I had a guy, Susan, I had a guy, Mitch Winkler. Susan, I had an awesome tennis record. I could never beat Mitch Winkler because he would serve left-handed and play right-handed. And if he was, you know, but he could serve right-handed, but then he'd play left-handed. And he had the queeriest game. You know, he one of those guys that would never say out. He just put his finger up. You know, then he was short and dorky. But the fact that, what happened is he told me about the court cleaning. So I couldn't get mad at him. See, I could, you know, try to intimidate. You know, sometimes, you know, I'm big back in then. I hit aces, all this stuff. I could never use my special technique of intimidate because he was my friend. And he just put his finger up. You know, I mean, I tell people I played against a guy with one hand.
Oh, you know, nice. You needed to play with my sister Bessie. My sister Bessie, I'd hit the ball out. I'm not lying when I say this. I'd hit the ball out. She'd go, no, not out. Not give me the finger.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the most insulting thing. It would just get in my car and I'd be so mad.
I told my kids to do that. When somebody hits a ball, I think I never said out.
No, I had my kids do that. Wouldn't even say ball. He would say, no. And it would, you know, because the worst thing you want to hear as a child is somebody say no. And she did it to agitate me. And it did agitate me. But it made me tougher. And I'll never forget the first time I beat her. And, I mean, that's still one of the highlights of my tennis career.
You know what would help? Really, tennis?
What?
If our father and daughters and parental tournaments we were pushed more. I think that would really help.
I mean, we used to play them all the time in Charlottesville, but you know, I think that would be it. I know we're trying to get in Beaumont, we're gonna do a senior program and introduce seniors to tennis on a red court. And the goal is to get the seniors paired with the red kids and have them
play together and to do some events with them like that, with the parents, with the grandparents, with different things, because I had lots of fond memories. My mom wasn't a tennis player. She was a basketball player. You'd have liked her. But my dad loved to play tennis, and I enjoyed my time on the court with him. Probably some of my fondest memories.
People don't really understand. I love tennis. The only reason I played basketball was because when I came out of high school, I had better better basketball offers. Back in '83, you're a high level basketball player where you could go to, all kind of different schools versus maybe 10 to 12 different schools for tennis. So it was just the popularity of basketball. I mean, I used basketball as a means to a way to get me somewhere. Tennis was my sport. I mean, I had scholarships. I could have went to tennis on a tennis scholarship, but it could not compare to basketball.
Well, I wish you would have come down and played basketball in 83 down at UVA. You know, I'd love that. We had a decent team in Charlottesville back in those days.
Oh, yes. I mean, and it was a bad thing. I chose a school that didn't have a tennis team. I used to, Coach Calhoun used to let me go to Harvard and play, but he would also let me play on a wall because I always found tennis to be a way to get control of myself. I mean, a way to be able to think about games. I mean, even in basketball, I was a defensive player. I'm the one who's making a steal. I'm the one who's rebound. I'm the one who's doing the small thinking things, passes here. I'm the way of looking at the game, open and wide. Because to me, I mean, and honestly, I used to tell people don't understand. I have articles that write. I didn't care about anything but winning. So if winning meant that I had to get 16 rebounds and no points, but I won, I didn't care. If it meant I had to get 30 points and no ground, whatever it took for me to win, but it wasn't a selfish win, meaning I didn't do it to win for myself. I did it within a team aspect of what winning was about. I didn't, you know, dominate or be selfish or look. And when we lost, I only lost in high school and basketball. I lost 7 high school games out of 4 years. And in college, I lost 16 high school games out of high school. I just think winning is important to me, but it's also what's most important to me. And when I try to tell people, when I say winning is important, is a winning effort. A winning effort is really, when I say winning is everything, yes, because a winning effort is everything. You know, I tell parents and the kids, for someone to say winning is everything, they're wrong. A winning effort is everything. They're right. Why? Because it's possible for two people to play their best. If they're playing a game, somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose. Losing and winning are results of effort. And if you give, these our kids, I think that we as coaches, I agree with lots of stuff that we talked about this evening with Susan. I think that you are right on time. But I also think that there is a society or a culture that thinks a little different. It's not saying that you can't adapt, because I know you can adapt. I know you. But I think that sometimes other coaches don't open their minds or don't see reality. They don't see real reality. They don't see that there's hundreds of thousands of kids that could be potential top tennis players or could be which push other kids to be better, because sometimes we don't understand that the person, that kid being good is the reason that your kid is being good. Why? Because they played against each other and they pushed each other to be good. There's a group of kids that the American society has that we don't even touch. Why? Because, first of all, we don't believe that they're there. Why? Because we can't relate to them. Why? Because we think if you're bad, you're bad, or if you're here, you're here. We think that tennis is an elite skilled game, to me, the only thing elite about tennis is the money that it costs. It's a skilled game, but so is shooting jump shots 40 feet away 7 times in a row at the end of the game. That's a skill too. Tennis is a skilled sport, but all high level sports and athletes are skilled.
Well, and basketball is a little bit more accessible. than tennis, because you usually don't have to pay to get on a basketball court. You know, it's just, you know, your shoes
and
the ball. And tennis, you need a racket, you need a this, and you're usually having to pay a lot of places to get on the court. And it's tough, and it's
But that's not necessarily true too, Susan. I think that one of the biggest problems, a big problem in the USA is Serena Williams. I hate to say this, I love her to death, but I can go ask 10 kids in Atlanta, tennis, what would they say? They'll say Serena Williams. That's all they know about tennis is Serena Williams. I'll say, well, what, you want to play tennis? No, it's a girl sport. Why? Because all they know of the sport is Serena Williams. And so, because Serena's won the tournaments, because Serena is the news. If you turn on the American news, we're not going to advertise John Isner in a quarterfinal. We don't have no face that they can relate to but Serena. I'm just being real. When we talk Serena,
I think Serena has done a lot of, Serena and Venus has done a lot of good. I just, a lot. I think right now, there's not a top American in the top 10 or that really has a shot at a Grand Slam, I think, at this moment. You know, hopefully that'll change. But it's one of those things that I think as a country, we can definitely do a lot better at promoting the sport and getting it out there and showing off the athleticism. I mean, I love the NBA or ESPN or the NBA or when they do the NCAA basketball or football and they show the top 10 highlights. How often is tennis in the top 10? Only like when it's when the U.S. Open or maybe something Wimbledon. But if you really showed some of the amazing athleticism
that these guys
can do. You know, showing Djokovic in a full split, showing Federer or Gil Monfils with hang down. I mean, Gil Monfils is awesome, his athletic ability, and you can show kids go, oh wow.
Basketball is nowhere near the physical conditioning that you need for tennis. The only sports that could compete with tennis would be a hockey player or a boxer. And the only reason boxing was because I can knock you out in the first round and not have to go there. Tennis doesn't have a knock you out. You got to play two. And if you're in the Grand Slam, you got to play three. There's no knockout. Hockey, why? Because other than that, basketball is a joke. Basketball is a joke. Tennis is a physical chess match, and if our kids understood the power, the strength of hitting balls, imagine hitting a serve, you got 120 miles an hour back at a person, or you're hitting rallies, the ball's going 70, 80 miles an hour, you're hitting 13. I mean, somebody told me, I remember the first time somebody told me, Wes, they hit 32 or 34 shots in a minute. There's no way in the world you could tell me somebody's hitting it. Those pros are hitting the ball in less than every 2 seconds. Well, I saw it from my own two eyes. They're hitting the ball every less than 2 seconds. Oh. What kind of athlete it takes for that?
Well, one of the things, I don't know if you caught this. I don't know if I put it up on my page. But the Virginia player, one of the Virginia tennis players, they had a video footage of him and his big serve with all these parades of different athletes from different sports at Virginia coming and playing. There was a basketball player, there was some of the soccer players, baseball player, various sports trying to return this guy's serve, men and women. And it was great. That's what I think that would be fun to do with having athletes, seeing, this is tennis, try to do this, and seeing what that's really like. And I think things like that would open people's eyes of what the sport really is. And I mean, I do, posted up something that I thought was great, because I do think really intelligent sport kids
are the ones that play tennis from knowing what the GPA scores are at the various universities. And I think we would attract more kids in the sport if we could show off the athleticism that really is required to play.
Well, I mean, one thing that I think that could help is commercials. I mean, take this idea,
yeah.
And it's copyrighted, so if somebody steals my idea, I'm coming after you. Take this, Susan. Take during the NBA championship or playoffs. You got two kids dunking, whatever color, white or whatever. They're doing a dunk-off. They're just dunking. Bam, 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 just dunking, 360, just dunking, Susan. They look up at the clock. They see they 5 minutes. They late. They run out to gym. Next thing you know, you got a tennis coach standing there with a basket of balls looking. Next thing you know, these kids are out there playing tennis. Do you know how much that would open the eyes to a lot of kids? Because a lot of kids would look like, because before they cut to see them at tennis courts, they'd be like, these boys are bad. These boys are great. Then at the end, they're tennis players. Just that there is a different, it would attract so many kids, the perception.
I think so too.
I mean,
I think so,
you know,
too. And I think, yeah, and I think one of the things that we're missing the boat as is years ago, one of the biggest programs in the USDA was the schools program. And I think it was a wonderful job. And I can remember talking to somebody that was there back in the days. I was still in high school and college. And my friend was there. And now it's next to nothing. And I think we really need to get it into the schools, get kids interested as an idea. Because, you know, when they're playing PE, you know, if their school district has elementary PE, they're playing what? They're playing basketball. They're playing football. They're playing soccer. They're playing, you know, what they call handball with a rubber ball up against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could get tennis exposure into those areas, I mean, in all schools, not just upper class, middle class, but every community, and get tennis in there and get pros to adopt the school. And, hey,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm going to help you with getting balls and getting equipment and work with the USTA, and I'm going to donate my time so we can do a tennis section in your PE program. I think that would go a long way, along with commercials, because I think you have to hit people up several times to make sure that they see the message.
Correct. Hey,
okay.
Susan, we are almost done. I mean, time flies. I mean, I like to thank everyone that's joined us for our conversation today. It was a little different with no guests, but I think that it was a very good show, because it had a chance. Susan and I had a chance to sit and talk about real issues, you know, not with a guest or with someone, but real issues. You know, we had a chance to sit and talk about under 10 tennis, and Susan has a different perspective. I have a different perspective, but do we learn something from each other? Yes, we learned that I'm always learning from Susan, but I'm learning. I learned that there's always different ways for different things, that, you know, there's different concepts that I should open my mind up to other ways and to other scenarios. You know, Susan?
Yeah. I mean, it's always good to talk and to see somebody else's perspective. And I was on the forum tonight talking to somebody, and I was like, I'm not arguing, I'm not debating, I want to understand. And I think that's, you know, I'm not in that scenario right now at this moment, but it's coming up where I'm going to have to expose kids to tennis that it's not even remotely on their radar. And, you know, you've given me some insight on some things to think about when I go into these areas talk to them about
it. That's the key. Well,
so I appreciate
we're going to do a show. We've got another show coming up Wednesday, and Susan touched on something that I thought was very, very good, a good show. I think that Wednesday show, I talked to Susan. I like us to try to focus on high school, elementary school, the school system in tennis. We'll have a guest on some high school coaches and some high school players. And I like to talk about high school tennis and how it Is it a high school tennis? Is it the catalyst or the catapult for college tennis? So what is high school tennis in America? I think that that is a spot or a level that is in dire need from some tweaking, for some focus on there and some ideas on there. And I know, Susan, I know that you have so much experience with high school tennis, and hopefully, you know, we can convince, you know, you can convince your buddy Dave to maybe drop in a little bit and throw a little bit of insight on there, because I mean, you know, every time he comes on the show, he shares such great information. I mean, I learned so much from him in high school of how to handle big. I mean, I just love the way he handles big groups. You know, how, I mean, I've never seen a coach. He had the kids' feet in the bar. I mean, I just think it's amazing what Coach Dave Smith does. And you know, we have a couple more high school coaches, and you know, sit and talk about high school tennis. You know, what can we do, or how can we make it better? Because I really believe that if we make high school tennis better, it can attract kids to tennis, but it also can help our colleges with tennis. It can do a lot. So Susan, I'm going to let you take us away and close us out. We got about a few seconds, but Susan, I want to say I enjoyed conversating with you. Lots of times we're partners in this, and we're hosting, and we have to sit and talk to other people. I enjoyed having a discussion with you. I enjoyed hearing your point of views. I mean, I look at you and I listen to what you say, and it makes so much sense to me. Whether or not it's right or wrong, I can't say that, because it's a situation. It's good to know things for situations. You give me knowledge that when I come across a situation, I have knowledge to be able to do that. When I come across this kid, you know, when I come across kids that maybe need that competition or that orange ball, I now have knowledge to understand, well, how it can help me and how it can do that. I think that's a very, very important thing. And I think the biggest problem with our coaches, especially tennis coaches, is our communication. You know, we don't ask questions. We are so quick to assume things. And I've learned from you that the best answer to a question, if you don't know about it, is a question. You know, why are you doing this? Instead of saying someone where that's this, that's wrong, well, why did you do this? Well, you know, understand it. Get the history of it. Understand it. I think that a lot of coaches should learn that to give a professional analysis of something means you first have to have some data about it. You have to have some knowledge about that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's... You know, but you go ahead and just take us away, and you know, I'll see everybody Wednesday. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us, and Susan, it's all yours.
Hey, I want to thank Wes. I always enjoy our time together and talking together, and looking forward to our next show, and hope everybody enjoyed this. And all I could say is happy Sunday, and enjoy your Martin Luther King Day, and remember what it was about. Have a great Sunday night, and we'll see you on the next show. Bye, Wes. Take care.
See you, Susan. Talk to you later. Thanks, Sue. Good night.
All right. Good night.